Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 100 for July 15th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll mark the milestone with a look back at some of the highlights from the first 99 shows. First, though, let's take a look at the news. It didn't take long for the other shoe to drop in the whiskey war between India, the Europeans, and the Americans. Just a few days after the Indian government lowered its tariffs on imported whiskey and other spirits, and we thought everything was going to be okay, it turns out otherwise. The government's decision only affected national tariffs, but states can still levy their own taxes on imported whiskey. For instance, the Scotsman reports today that Mumbai is now hitting imports with a 200% tax, and the states of Delhi and Bangalore are expected to announce their own taxes this week. The reason they'll be able to get away with it, the new taxes on imports are equal to what the states tax domestic spirits producers, and that means there are no punitive taxes for the World Trade Organization to act on. Before now, imports into Mumbai were hit with a flat fee local tax that amounted to about $5 a bottle. Now the imports face the national government's 150% tariff and the 200% local tax. White & Mackay is bringing out a new series of limited edition whiskies to be sold under the Rare & Prestige Collection label. The first four bottlings include a 1973 Dalmore, aged in Cabernet Sauvignon casks, along with a 40-year-old White & Mackay blend, and 40-year-old single malts from Dalmore and Isle of Jura. Brooke Lottie has two new single malts coming out soon. The first 18-year-old distillery bottling will be available in August, and the PC6 will be available in September. Now, the 6 is this year's version of the first whiskey produced under Brooke Lottie's current ownership after the distillery reopened in 2001. The PC5 sold out rapidly, and I suspect the same thing will happen with the PC6. If you heard my discussion with Nick Morgan in the last episode about this year's Classic Malts Cruise, well, the cruise gets underway today in Oban, and last word I got from Nick is that the rain has stopped in Oban for now. By the way, Diageo has a photographer posting images from the cruise over the next 2 weeks. There's a link to the website at the WhiskeyCast website. Of course, the address is www.whiskeycast.com. I have to admit, there were times when I wondered if I'd find enough things to talk about to keep a whiskey podcast going for any length of time. Of course, that was before November 12th, 2005, when episode 1 of Whiskey Cast hit the web. Hi, welcome to the first edition of Whiskey Cast, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. Since this is our first episode, we'll look at two new whiskeys, Penderyn from Wales, and from the heart of Kentucky bourbon country, Bernheim Original Wheat Whiskey. First, though, just a few words on what Whiskey Cast is and what it won't be. I won't rate whiskeys or tell you what to drink and how to drink it. I'm not qualified to do that, and there are others who can, frankly, do it much better. I've been a journalist for 25 years, and what I will do on this podcast is bring you whiskey news, the latest on events and festivals all around the world, and interviews with the experts who make whiskey what it is, the water of life. That's been the best part of producing Whiskey Cast, the chance to hear some really good stories from the people who make whiskey their lives. Here's an example from episode 15, featuring Tom Bullitt of Bullitt Bourbon.
I had jobs in high school, and one of them I fell in love with down at the big Bernheim distillery, and he was so delighted that I would interest him. As a teenager, that I was interested in getting up and going to work, that he was very encouraging for a while. He said, well, Tom, that's great, and we've got a little family recipe here, and a tradition, as you know, in the distilling business. And then when I graduated from high school, I said, well, this is what I want to do. I want to go into the distilling business. He said, Tom, you're going to be a lawyer. And I said, well, okay, so I am a lawyer.
A couple of months later, I sat down with John McDougall, the only man to manage distilleries in all five of Scotland's whiskey regions.
Jim came up to me at the Whiskey Fest, I think it was in New York, at the end of last year, and said to me, we've been talking, Andrew Gray, his colleague and I, and we reckon, John, in fact we know that you're the only person still alive who's done that. And I said, I've never really thought about it, Jim. What are you trying to tell me? You know? And he said, no. He said, you should be very proud of that. He said, because I don't think anybody else will ever do it. Ever. He doesn't think. Because the opportunities are not quite as plentiful today, perhaps, as they were then. They could be, but I don't know. I don't really think that much about it. But when I actually do pinch myself, I think, hey, that's not a bad CV, not a bad thing to have on your CV.
Now, we know about Balvenie, we know about Laphroaig, we know about Springbank. What are the other ones?
Tormore Distillery, Ladyburn Distillery. Ladyburn was in the Lowlands, Tormore was in Speyside. Balvenie in these days was reckoned to be a Highland distillery before the sub-regions all came in. Laphroaig, of course, was Islay, and Springbank is Campbelltown. So these are the five regions that are recognized nowadays.
John was referring to Jim McEwen of Brooklady. Jim's been on WhiskeyCast several times. And if you don't know Jim, he's the shy, retiring type who never says a cross word. Actually, Jim's one of the easiest people to interview. Just point the microphone at him, ask a question, and relax for the next 5 minutes while Jim holds forth, as he did when I dared to use the F word in front of him back in episode 8. In this case, though, the F word was finish.
Finish is a word that means the end, you know, and that's a bad word. The system I use is called, I call it an ACE program, which is additional cask enhancement. You're taking what's already good and enhancing. Finishing is a real shit word that should be banned, you know.
See what I mean about shy and retiring? Every once in a while, I've had the chance to take the show on the road. In April of 2006, episode 32 came from New York's Grand Central Station at a charity auction for a rare bottle of Glenfiddich.
At $20,000 then, right here on my right, and down it goes at $20,000, sold to you, sir, for $20,000.
Needless to say, I wasn't bidding that night. I get asked occasionally about my favorite interview. It's really an easy choice. Last November, I got to sit down with Elmer T. Lee, the 82-year-old retired master distiller at Buffalo Trace, and one of only two living bourbon distillers with a whiskey named after him.
When I retired in 1986, the owners at that time said, Elmer, we'd like to name a bourbon after you. I said, fine, you can do it, provided you let me pick the bourbon. So they agreed, and I'm picking the bourbon for it still.
And what do you look for when you pick that bourbon?
Something that's very mild and mellow to my taste. I like the caramel, the sweetness that I get from it, the vanilla, oaken flavors, all of those things that are pleasing to my taste is what I look for.
I know that you and Jimmy Russell are the only two distillers alive that have a bourbon named after you. That's got to be something of a matter of pride for you.
It is. There was three of us, of course, Booker Noel, who's now passed away, but they're the only three distillers that I know that have a bourbon named for them. Jimmy Russell's, Russell's Reserve, Elmer T. Lee, and Booker's.
Let me ask you one final question. What do you want your legacy to be in this business? Why do you want people to remember you 20, 30 years from now?
I want people to remember me as being knowledgeable of the business, the craft, and someone who was fair and honest in dealing with them. I want people at the plant to remember me as a good manager.
And a good whiskey maker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was part of it. That's right.
That's one of the few in-depth interviews where I didn't ask the question that's become almost a tradition. When the time comes for that final dram of all the whiskeys you've tasted, which one would you pick? Here's how whiskey writer Jim Murray answered it in episode 34.
It's that kind of thing where the ship's sinking, isn't it? And there's a bunch of whiskeys out there, and you can only grab one. Which one's it going to be? I think what I have to do is probably break open the last bottle of Ardbeg that I have, which I bought, I think, in about 1983 or something like that, in Port Ellen, at the co-op store there, the cooperative store. And it was £10 for the bottle. It was, or it is, a 10-year-old, so it would have been distilled in about around about 1972, something like that. And it's the old Ardbeg. It's an Ardbeg which today you can't taste. In fact, it's a whiskey style. There is nothing close to it today. And when people taste the 1974 Ardbeg or 77, these are the ones that connoisseurs are really, really in love with. And then they're getting some kind of idea of this. But at 10 years old, it just seems to be the perfect age for it. The amount of oak and the peat and the different type of peat just seem to have married in a particular way that if you waved a wand at it and did all kinds of chanting for 2 days around it, you could not get it any better.
Jim Cryle of the Glenlivet picked one of his own whiskies in episode 64.
I don't think there's any contest, really. I mean, I would just go for our 18-year-old Glenlivet. That's my favorite. 21-year-old is exceptional, and it's a little bit special. But if I was just going to have one left, that's what I would go for, the 18-year-old.
And Jim McEwen had an answer that might surprise you.
Lochside 1966.
Why?
It's the most elegant, sophisticated, well-made whiskey I have ever tasted. I've tasted Blackmore's. I've tasted Rochlady's 70s. I've tasted all. Lochside 1966. Impossible to find, but I have a bottle. It reminded me of Lady Diana. Beautiful, elegant, sophisticated, and completely misunderstood. Lochside was knocked down. It came from the town of Montrose on the East Coast. I swear to God, if you never taste another whiskey in your life again, if you can find Lochside, just a forgotten diamond, a jewel in the crown, that would be the one. Most definitely. That's from an Isla man to say that. That's something. That really is something. It would be very easy to say an Isla one, but I got to say, it just drives me crazy, that whiskey. Beautiful, beautiful brand. Lochside. If you can find it, buy it. And don't share it. Keep it for yourself.
Finally, a review wouldn't be complete without a reference to the fiasco of February 2006. In a series of several episodes, I butchered the name of the Dutch town of Groningen. I hope I got it right that time. But it got so bad during February that a helpful listener finally sent me an audio file with the proper pronunciation. And after pronouncing the names of Scotland's two major cities in an American style, WhiskeyCast listener James Andrew put his audio editing skills to work to teach me a lesson. Glasgow.
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 No, Glasgow.
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 Go. Glasgow. Glasgow.
Edinburgh.
Oh, I give up.
I'd like to think I've gotten those two right most of the time ever since. But that's been about the only area where I've received complaints over the past 20 months. Many of you have been kind enough to email me with compliments, along with suggestions for stories and your questions. Thank you for your support over the first 100 episodes, and here's to the next 100. And while I'm handing out the thank yous, I also need to acknowledge everyone in the whiskey business who's been kind enough to let me interview them, as well as the media relations people who have helped set up many of those interviews, answer my questions, and never once questioned the legitimacy of a whiskey podcast. The list of names would be far too long to include here. I also want to thank the people at Malt Advocate Magazine and Whiskey Magazine. Both have been kind enough to let me crash their events to do interviews when they could have considered me a competitor. In addition, the Whiskey Magazine editors have allowed me to talk about the show on their message boards, and that's how many longtime listeners first heard about the show. Finally, and most of all, I need to thank my family, my wife Christina, and my daughters Brianna, Aria, and Tessa. They put up with me disappearing into my office for several hours every weekend when I'm sure they'd rather I spend time with them instead. That's all for this 100th episode of Whiskey Cast. As always, I'd like to hear from you. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.